Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Truth, Love, Energy Radio, where we get out our tools for understanding, nurturing, and building our universe using the Michael Teachings. The most basic foundation of the Michael Teachings is that we are here to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn. For more information on the Michael Teachings, please visit truthloveenergy.com and check out the basic introduction so you too can join in with the growing number of students from around the world. On today's show, we begin our monthly basic teachings discussion, and today we discuss the seven roles in essence. The number to call if you'd like to participate is 646-200-0772, or click to talk. I'm your host and resident Michael Channel, Troy, and I hope you enjoy the show. Everybody, if you were having trouble hearing the show at the top of the beginning, it was not your browser, it was not your problem, it was mine. Everything froze up. I don't know what the hell happened, and it's a combination of my being prepared and Blog Talk Radio. I don't know what they're doing. The redesign and the functioning and the pop-up ads, it just really causes a lot of problems. So I am really sorry about that, but we're started, and we're going to get right into it. So today's show, we're going to talk about the seven roles in essence, and part of the reason why we got delayed in starting is because I have prepared a pre-recorded part of the show so that I could spend some time talking and thinking things through and presenting it, and it was basically all done in one take anyway, but I'm going to go ahead and put that on now so that everybody can follow along. If you'd like to, make sure you have the Overleaves chart in front of you, the map that shows all of the different aspects of the essence and personality system. But today we're going to discuss the seven roles in essence, so let's get started on that, and I hope this plays all right. Good Lord.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of our TLE radio series that focuses on bringing some discussion and exploration of the basic teachings. Once a month, we'll go over the basics of the teachings. So if you're new to the teachings or if you're interested in more depth in some of the basic stuff that goes beyond a kind of horoscope level, that's usually what's available out there. These kinds of discussions can really bring a little bit more dimension to what we presume we already understand and what we already know. So if you're old to the teachings, it's also good for you to be exploring this. The problem with being introduced to a teaching is that it has to, or introduced to anything actually, is that you have to skim over so that you can see the bigger picture. And in that skimming over, the feeling that you grasp it can be had, and then you don't go back. You kind of leave it at that skimmed level, you leave it at that superficial level. And sometimes people stay stuck there. So I'm hoping that these explorations of the basics can really help to bring some dimension that might be lacking. And if you're new to the teachings, I do want to make sure that you understand that this is not going to give you the bigger picture of the teachings. It's going to give you parts of the teachings explored more deeply. So you'll still want to go to truthloveenergy.com and read the basic intro. And if you don't have a essence and personality profile, which is what most of what I'll call the basic teachings is going to focus on, then make sure you ask your favorite channel for one. Ask me for one if you would like. I offer them for donation. And if you don't have any money, then make sure you ask me anyway, because it's the one thing that I don't think anybody should have to worry about paying for if they need their essence and personality profile to get started in studying the teaching. So make sure you contact me through the site, truthloveenergy.com, and ask for your profile. And that way you can follow along. So what we're going to discuss today is the what Michael calls the seven roles in essence. And the reason why they call them the seven roles in essence is because they differentiate your essence from the role that you play in the universe. And but I do have to tell you that those words are used interchangeably a lot in discussions and in writing. So it's not, it's just something that knowing in the back of your mind is the case can help you. But they definitely are used interchangeably, essence and role. But in actuality, it's the role in essence or the essence role, because they are two different things. Your essence is a spark, or the part of you that exists and cannot be destroyed, that Michael talks about, and that you are a fragment of this, you know, this larger, higher source. You're a part of that. And that, you probably see yourself differently when you're looking at yourself outside of a body, but that part of you that you are that can't be destroyed, that is a part of the oneness, and even when it's fragmented, knows this, that's your essence. That's the essence of who you are. However, the role in essence is the part that you play when you take on a cycle of lifetimes. This is the role that you play within a species of sentience. Because in the Michael teachings, you don't jump around different species. You don't reincarnate through, across different planets. You stay within a certain structure of family. And in this case, it would be human sentience. And within the human family of sentience, you play a role. And those roles are broken down into various ways that propel the universe forward or propel evolution forward. And the way Michael has broken that down is into categories that could be described as truth, love, and energy. I'll go into more detail in a minute. But those are the three building blocks of the universe, the truth, love, and energy. Everything can be broken down into those categories. And of course, then there's the neutral category of assimilation, or, you know, comprehending all of that, putting it all together. It's what each of those things orbit around and eventually find synthesis. So truth, love, and energy. Now in the Michael teachings, the way that is presented in the essence profile is by calling it the expression axis, the inspiration axis, and the action axis, truth, love, and energy. Truth goes with expression, love goes with inspiration, and energy goes with action. So energy and action, truth and expression, and love and inspiration. So if you think of the seven roles, there are seven roles, and you'll notice in the Michael system there are a lot of sevens, because this is a progressive number. This is a number that moves you through different octaves. It's an evolutionary unfolding. So if you think of a piano keyboard going from one octave to the next, there are seven keys between each octave. And even though it's considered an octave, you know, obviously relating to eight, that's because it's including the first level or the first key of the next seven keys in that progression. So seven is that progression from one octave to another octave. And so that's where the seven comes in. We'll talk about that more in another show. maybe in an advanced teaching show. But if you think about the roles being broken down throughout truth, love, energy, and let's say comprehension, which is the assimilation, then you have truth that's expressed one-on-one, and there's truth that's expressed to the masses. There's love that's expressed one-on-one, and love that's expressed to the masses. And there's energy or action that's taken one-on-one, and action that is that affects the masses. And that differentiation between the masses and one-on-one in the Michael teachings is called ordinal and exalted. Ordinal is one-on-one, and you can remember that because it starts with an O. So ordinal, one-on-one, exalted, mass, the masses. Another word for exalted that you'll see in the Michael teachings is cardinal. So cardinal and ordinal. And if you just remember the ordinal represents one-on-one, it'll help you to remember which is which. I'm including a link in the notes here. I'll pop it into the chat room now so that if you're in the chat room, you get this. But it's also in the notes so that you can see and go to this link to look at a map of the overleaves. That way you can follow along and see the inspiration axis, the expression axis, the action axis, the assimilation axis, and then all of the different, the way it breaks down into ordinal and exalted or ordinal and cardinal. And also it's going to look really tiny when you go to the link. So when you click it, it's going to pop up in a new window. So make sure your pop-up blocker doesn't keep you from finding that. So go get that. Pause if you are able to pause this and make sure you have it in front of you so you can follow along. Okay. All right. So let's get back on track here. But if you're looking at the profile, you'll see what I mean by the roles being organized on certain axes: inspiration, expression, action. That's love, truth, and energy. And then the assimilation axis is the what I would consider to be the comprehension or the synthesis. Okay. Now, in any system where there is a family or a group, the proportion of certain roles that are played in that family are different for different roles because of just the dynamic of a population. So you'll notice in the Michael teachings that some roles are there are more than others. You'll come across more of a certain role than others. And that's because in any given species or any given group of sentients, the roles are proportional to the dynamic that works best for evolution. So let me go over the names of each of these roles first. So in the love axis, or in the inspiration axis, this would be your servers who serve or who work with people one-on-one. They're the servers. And then there's the priests who work in the more exalted. So the server is the ordinal love or the ordinal inspiration, and the priest is the exalted love or cardinal inspiration. Then you have artisans and sages. These are both the truth axis or the expression axis. And the artisans are the ones who do this one-on-one, and the sages are the ones who do this on a larger scale. Then you have the action axis, and those are the warrior and the king. The warrior is one-on-one, the king is exalted. And then the assimilation or the comprehension axis is the scholar. And when you first start exploring the Michael teachings, it's really, really easy to interpret these roles as literal. So, for instance, if you hear the word priest, you know, you think all immediately of religion, and that's not necessarily the case at all. There are all kinds of priests in the world, or the priest essence shows up in a lot of different ways in the world. So what you're going to notice in the proportion of these roles is that, like I said, there are more of some than the others. And in this case, servers take the highest proportion of roles. That's because there are a lot more opportunities for evolution when serving other people or learning or manifesting lessons around service So it's a very popular role because one of the fast track through evolution is learning how to be of service. And it's not necessarily the being of service, but the experiences that it brings. So server role is extremely popular. And also because in a population, there's a much more of a need for everybody to be taken care of than there is, for instance, the king. The king is the smallest proportion, the smallest percentage of roles, and it's because it's not very necessary for a whole bunch of people to be in a position to lead the masses. It just takes one to lead a large group of people, whereas servers, you know, it can take a whole lot of servers to heal the wounded, to heal the sick, to take care of the needs of people. So as you can see, it makes sense. The percentage is higher in the server role versus the king role, which has a lower percentage. You're going to hear paper rustling and stuff, so I apologize for that, but I have a lot of notes here to refer to. And so what we're going to do now is go through each role as they exist on the axis, and I'll tell you a little bit about each one, and then we're going to hopefully take calls in the last half hour or so of the show. So if you are interested in calling, make sure you look at the number there or use click to talk and get in the queue. And we'll make sure you get on the air to ask some questions. As you're listening to this, I hope that what you find, let's say you've gotten your overleaves or you are looking at the different roles and trying to figure out which one you are, I hope by the time you're done listening to this that one of these strikingly rings true, because they are very specific. Even though we can relate to all of these roles because they kind of, you know, they're archetypes. They're a part of our universal experiences, and so it's going to be very easy for us to relate to all of them. And also because we have all of these essence roles in our lives through being played out in different people, it's very easy for us to identify with a few at least, especially if our caretakers are of a certain role and we learn how to function in the world based on their teaching us. So it can be really sometimes a little bit complicated to differentiate, but there are very specific, unique things about the roles, and hopefully you'll get to that part that just, without question, rings true. So let's focus first on the servers and the priests. So the percentage of the population of souls, not necessarily the population of incarnated people, but the population of souls is between 25% and 30%. So in any group of sentience, any group of specific sentience, there are approximately 30% of them that are server essences. And I also want to point out that in the original books, this role was called slave essence. And Michael is very specific about how they use words, so they did not use it in the way that we interpret that word today. They used it in a way that represents that the word server more accurately represents, at least in our time right now. But if you prefer the word slave, then you go ahead and use that. It's not going to be, it's not going to take away from anything. But they use the word, we've updated it to use the word server just because, well, it's a little bit more direct to the heart of what that particular role is, and it also bypasses the current political perspective of that word. So, server. And in the positive pole, servers, what I'm going to tell you now about as we go through these is the positive and negative pole of each role. And the positive pole of a role is the way that that particular role manifests itself in the world in a way that is expansive. And in the negative pole, it's the way that that particular role manifests in the world in a way that's restrictive or limited. Also, your essence role is really how you shine in the world. There are more components in your profile that you'll go over as you learn it, and it will help explain all the different nuances of who you are. But the role is at the heart of who you are. And it's not always showing up in the world. It doesn't always show up every day. It shows up when you shine. It shows up when you really feel aligned with life. And sometimes that shows up in the context of your work that you've chosen or in certain relationships. So don't think that because you know your role that it should always be exemplified constantly. It doesn't work like that. It's who you are regardless of how you are. So, and when it does show up, it shines. And when it shows up positively, it's beautiful. And when it's a negative, it can be very painful. So Michael uses the terms positive pole and negative pole just to describe the ends of the spectrum. Not necessarily that one's good or bad, but one is more tends to be more painful and the other one tends to be happier, tends to be more expansive and feels good. So when we're talking about the positive and negative poles, keep that in mind that you're going to experience the spectrum between the two, but knowing where you are in your essence role, in how the heart of who you are is either restricted or expansive, can help you to make more conscious choices. And that's what the whole point of the Michael teachings is to help you to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn. So the positive pull for the server is service. And that means that the server, when they shine, they're providing something for someone, even if it's for themselves. Now, it's very difficult for servers in general to just provide for themselves, just because inherently that just doesn't feel right. There's a need to serve other people. There's a need to recognize what everybody around them requires and to help find it or provide it. So servers, when they shine, and when they're at their expansive best, they're in service. It feels good. And when servers are in the negative pole, it's called bondage. And there are other words you'll find in different books that describe the same thing. But the server who is in bondage has obligated themselves in a way that is beyond their means. So they begin to serve because they think they have to, or they serve when they don't want to, or they serve and lose themselves in the process. They don't take care of themselves while they take care of other people. So in this case, bondage just describes when the service has lost any kind of motivation that comes from the heart and comes from the soul and is motivated purely from routine or obligation. And the interesting thing about servers is that as sweet as they can be, because they know what we need, they can also turn on a dime and become some of the most manipulative, resentful, passive-aggressive people that you've ever met, because when they're in the negative pole, it hurts. And servers are so easily overlooked because they're so good at taking care of our needs that we start to count on them. We take them for granted. And I'm saying we as in humanity. And we take them for granted, and then we end up exploiting them. We end up putting them in a position of what Michael describes as bondage. And ultimately, it's their choice. I mean, as far as being able to get out of it, they can, you know, draw the line. They can say no. They can recuperate and ask for help themselves. But it's really hard. It's really hard for servers to do that. So that's one of the things that servers need to do is to learn how to take care of themselves and only serve when it feels good. And I'm going to come back to all these roles with some very specific information after we go through them on this surface level at first. Now, the server sees the world as their honored guests, and they seek to serve the common good. They like to inspire on that level of common good, and they see the world as honored guests. The priest, on the other hand, sees the world as their congregation, and seeks to inspire or bring about the higher a vision of the higher good, not necessarily the common good, but the higher good or the higher ideal. And the priest in the positive pole is compassion. So what this means is that the priest is able to see the bigger picture of who you are. They're able to see the bigger picture of what we are. They're able to see that vision, hold that vision of who we are. And they're able to see that, to elicit compassion. And this is why that Michael uses this word, because it requires compassion in the process of fulfilling a vision. It requires compassion because it's not always going to go smoothly. It's not always going to be fulfilled because it's a vision. There are going to be ups and downs. There are going to be meanderings. There's going to be failures, mistakes. And compassion allows room, leniency, for all of that while still maintaining the vision. So when you know a priest in your life, and they make up about 7 to 8% of the population, when you know a priest in your life, when they're in the positive pole, they really get you to see what's best for you, what's good for you, and inspires that consideration of those larger factors that affect your life. As we go along, I'm going to try to give examples of each role that are in the media. For instance, on a server level, there's the server essence. Some of the more popular or well known is like Mother Teresa. And some of these you might not know because servers very rarely get into the spotlight, so you might have to do some research. But Queen Victoria and Florence Nightingale, so Albert Schweitzer, these are servers that have come to some notoriety that you can look at their lives and see how it played out, and so you can get an idea of what they feel like. Priests. Some of the popular priests would be like Oprah Winfrey. You might see how she definitely exemplifies the priest in the world. Princess Diana, Bach, Allen Ginsberg. These are people you can look up and see, if you want to, how they played the role of priest in the world. Nancy Reagan, I think, was a priest. So in the positive pole, that's what they do. They hold that higher vision of what they think is best for you. And if you're in alignment with that, it's beautiful, because then you can move in that direction and they can help you. In the negative pole, it's called zealousness or zeal. And that means that the person has decided what's good for you, or the priest has decided what's good for you, and is imposing that higher vision upon you. And when they impose that higher vision on you, that bigger picture, against your will, that's zeal. They no longer are in a place of compassion, and in fact, they will, if you know a priest in your life and they're in zeal, it's even if you agree with them that their perspective of you is, or their vision of you and what's best for you is accurate, but you're not ready to take on the work of that, or that there are steps that need to be taken before reaching that vision, the priest that's in zeal will hound you and just be on your back constantly, trying to impose this vision on you and push you toward it without your actually being on board with it. And so you can see this happens a lot, you know, in the masses when a priest gets in zeal. A lot of priests are the reason why we go into war, because they hold this vision and they impose it and they get everybody riled up to fight for a cause and to impose it on other groups. So a lot of priests are responsible for our historical wars. So now we'll move on to the truth axis or the expression axis and talk about artisans and sages. And artisans and sages, well, let's start with artisans. Artisans in the positive pole is creation. So first of all, the heart of the artisan is to create. They have to create. It's important for them to bring something new into this world, even if it's just a new mood in the room when they walk into it. But they're always on the cutting edge of creativity. They're really close to what you would consider to be the creative force of the universe. And they can sometimes come across as a little dingy and zingy and out there. And with a lot of artisans are diagnosed with ADD, but that's just their design. That's the way that they function. They're just all over the place in their mind. But they take about 20% of the population. So they're a rather large group, and that's because, you know, being on the physical plane, it's really important to constantly refresh it to keep things new. And so artisans do that. They refresh things for us, or they create brand new things for us. And they see the world as their model. They see the world as a blank canvas with which they can paint at their, you know, at their will. So in the positive pole, they are creating. And in the negative pole, it's called delusion. And I think in some of the books it's called artifice. And this basically means that the inherent need of the artisan to create is so strong that when they don't have a canvas, or when they feel like they don't have a canvas, or when they feel like they aren't being able to create what it is that they want, it will spill over internally, and they start to create realities inside their own head that don't match what's happening outside of their head. So sometimes if you know an artisan, you know what I'm talking about, that sometimes reality is very different for them than it is for everyone else around them, and there's no way to convince them otherwise. They are in delusion, and this isn't always an ugly thing. Sometimes it's comical, but sometimes it's really painful, and it can be really frustrating, especially if you have an artisan friend and you're talking to this artisan and they are talking about how horrible life is, or how they want things to be different, and you spend hours having an in-depth conversation, and you get to the heart of it, and they make a breakthrough, and then you leave them feeling so good, and then you come back to them the next day, and it's all back to zero. It's all completely lost. It's as if there was no conversation held at all. It's when they're in delusion, that's what it's like. It's just a constant constant withdrawal into their own ideas about reality without any input from outside of them. And we'll talk about different ways that these roles can bring themselves into the positive pole in a little bit. So that's the artisan. They have to create one-on-one. They see the world as their model. And sages are the ones who have to express to the world, or bring the truth to the world. And the sages you could think of as the big kids of the universe. They take up about 7 to 10% of the population at any given group, and they are the truth sayers. They are the teachers among us, but they are also, like I said, the children of all of the souls. And they can be very sensitive. They can be very slow to mature, but this is because their emphasis, the heart of a sage, is about making life understandable and making life fun and making life happy. And so it makes sense that they're slow to mature, because they help remind the rest of us to look at the lighter side of things. So you'll see a lot of sages moving in the realms of comedy circles. They're the ones who are the class clowns, and they make people laugh. But when they're at their best, it's called dissemination. The positive pole is dissemination. And so when they really shine, it's when they teach you, when they bring some sort of wisdom to you that returns you to a place of innocence. They bring you back to a place where things make sense, and they help you to see the lighter side of things. And it's beautiful. When sages are at their best, it's just delightful. And in the negative pole, that's when the sage is so distracted with the, you know, because inherently they have a deep need to express themselves and also to find out the truth and to share that. And so in the negative pole, when they've discovered a truth and they think that's the truth, they can tell you this truth as if it's true without having, they can manipulate it, basically. Sages can be really good liars. They can be really good actors. They can really In the negative pole, it's called oration. So where sages have such an inherent need to express, the important thing is to gauge the audience, to be able to look at who you're communicating with and know what it takes for the message to be heard. When they're in the negative pole, the sage will either manipulate the information so that it's more palatable or entertaining so that they can get a rise out of their audience, or they don't even gauge their audience at all and they perform themselves and oration is basically talking just to hear yourself talk. So they're no longer engaged with their audience, they're no longer paying attention to the dynamic of communication, they're just on. And this can show up as being really obnoxious, really immature, making statements just to make statements, being shocking just to elicit responses, doing anything for attention. So that's the way the sage can show up in the negative pole. And they see the world, I think we already said this, but they see the world as their audience. And they're always searching for the unique thing, whereas the artisan is always looking to create that unique thing. So you'll notice that if you know a sage, they tend to be the person in your life that always introduces you to something new and something exciting. So now let's go to the warrior and the king, which are the energy or the action roles. And the ordinal action role is the warrior. They bring action into the world one-on-one. And they make up about 17%, 15 to 17% of the population. And they are our protectors. They're the ones who see the world as territory to conquer, that everything is a challenge worth taking on. And so that's why Michael used the word warrior. And they tend to show up in our lives as the very loyal. They're the protectors in our lives. They're the ones who help to bring order to our lives. And the way they do this is by helping us to refine our actions, you know, because this is an action role. So in the positive pole, it's called persuasion in the Michael teachings. And what this means is that they're able to know what choices and actions are to your benefit, and they can get you to make those choices in a way that it is your choice. It is your actions that come from within you that are aligned with what they see as beneficial to you. And in the negative, so that's persuasion. That's getting you on board with being safe. And in the negative pole, it's coercion. And this is sort of bullying you into directions or choices or actions that they think are the most beneficial to you in terms of your physical world and life and structure. And so, you know, just think, if you think of a stereotypical situation of where a warrior might be a policeman, and if a policeman is in a position to, you know, regardless of what you know about a situation, they can get you on board to move out of a situation where there was danger, for instance. And then in other situations, the police can also be coercive and bullying and use their batons and hurt people as a way to get them supposedly under control and out of danger. So that's a real stereotypical way of looking at it, but it's an easy image that actually is accurate to how warriors can show up in the world. And the warriors, like I said, see the world as territory to conquer, and they also see it as a place to explore. They're very exploratory. They like to get out there and get their hands onto things. The king is the exalted action role. They make up only about 2%, well, between 2 and 4% of a population, and these are the people who lead us on a large scale. These are the people who affect the masses. Not always, you know, this doesn't always show up in every lifetime. And that should be noted that all of these roles are at the heart of who a person is, but it's not necessarily how a person is in any given lifetime, because there are all kinds of circumstances that can shape a person's life. I know several kings who live in a very closed circle of intimate friends, and there are reasons for this, because you know, in other lives, they may have had really really obvious public lifetimes, and then in certain lifetimes, it's a way of taking a break and gathering themselves and focusing on their closest supporters to recuperate and to heal and to learn specific things before taking on another lifetime where they are more out there. So when you know a king, it doesn't mean they're in a, you know, on a pedestal or in a on a throne. They can be the corner butcher. They can be just your best friend, or somebody who runs a company, or is the head of a nice, tight family. So they don't always show up literally. So in the positive pole, it's mastery, and this is where the king is able to see what mastery means. In this case, is that they're able to see all of the parts, all of the things that go into making something work, and they're able to organize that in a way that it does work. So mastery is about, let's say, just looking at a king, thinking of it, the king sees the world as their kingdom. So let's say the king is looking out over their kingdom, and they know what each group or person does well and helps to move them, moves them into a position to make the kingdom run smoothly. They're able to bring out the inherent skills of everybody and encourage those in a way that works together. That would be mastery. And this can be, take that same analogy and apply it on small scales or even larger scales. And, a king running a company knows what works and how to move things around so that they do work well together. That's mastery. Or let's say a king is just doing things on a small scale in their life. They're trying to see this bigger picture and try to rearrange things so that they work in a way that serves them well. And in the negative pole, it's tyranny. And tyranny shows up, basically, if you think of, go back to the analogy of the kingdom, the king in the negative pole is going to be looking at the kingdom and deciding what works and forcing people to take those positions and those jobs and those roles regardless of how well they do them, just because they've decided that's what works. So tyranny is not paying attention to how to reorganize and structure a system so that it works well, but just imposing it, forcing the parts together, and that doesn't work very well. But sometimes when a king is in tyranny and they start being tyrannical and it's not working well, it can just make them even more tyrannical. And if you know a king and they don't have like a large group to work with, you know that it's very frustrating to be around them, because they're constantly, in the negative pole at least, they're constantly thinking that everything else should already know how to do what they think should be done. It is amazing to me how consistent that attitude is in the kings that I know, is that they get exasperated with the stupidity of people, they get exasperated with the design of things, they get exasperated with the way things work in systems, and instead of taking, you know, mastering it by looking at it and figuring out what they could do, how they could do it, even if it means compromise, they will refuse to compromise and just constantly battle that scenario. They'll constantly be battling it. And the tyranny can show up as serious temper. So that's the king. And the neutral role, or the role that I think represents the comprehension or the synthesis of truth, love, and energy, is called the scholar role. They make up about 12 to 14% of the essences in any population. They're the assimilators. They're the record keepers. At the heart of a scholar is observation. They like watching life. They like studying life. life is fascinating to them. And when a scholar can show up as specializing in certain areas of life, and sometimes they try to cover a broad area of life. But I'm thinking about it, and I think all the scholars I know pretty much have specialized in certain areas of life. But thinking about it, I do actually know some who have they're just walking encyclopedias. It's amazing. Now, I don't want to be stereotypical of the role, because sometimes the scholar doesn't show up the way you would expect him, because they are the most invisible role, or I should say the most transparent role. They can show up looking like any of the other roles because they are neutral. So what scholars can tend to do is take on the clothing of other roles that have been in their lives. So even though, and they're the most difficult to spot because of this, so some scholars show up as very warrior-like, some scholars show up as very sage-like, some scholars show up as very priestly. But at the heart of the scholar, it's this need to know. Scholars, in the positive pole, it's called knowledge. This is basically where they're very experiential. So even though they like to study and observe, they really need to get into they need to gain the experiences in order to make it knowledge. There's no way that it can actually be assimilated as true, accurate, valid without the experience. So in the positive pole, the scholar is willing to get involved with life. And in the negative pole, it's called theory. And this is where the scholar has all kinds of ideas about life and speculations. And yes, they may show up as being true from observation, but they haven't really got the experience. They didn't get involved. And so what you'll find is that the scholar can show up in some lifetimes as being submerged in whatever it is that they're studying for that lifetime. So for instance, a scholar can have all kinds of theories about alcoholism, but it'll take a lifetime of being an alcoholic for them to actually get it, what it means to be an alcoholic. So you'll notice that scholars can submerge themselves into very deeply into very interesting elements of life and then come out of it unscathed or carry it into the next life as wisdom, as knowledge. So they're really hard to spot, and they see the world as an object of study. So what I wanted to do before moving on to more depth into these roles is to give you those examples of each, because I did the servers and artisans, servers and priests, but let me tell you about some artisans in the world that you might find interesting, like Frank Lloyd Wright would be an artisan, Vincent van Gogh, I'm sure some people will correct me, Walt Whitman, George Lucas, Thomas Jefferson, Edgar Allan Poe, Sean Penn is an artisan. And so you'll see that even though, for instance, you think of sages as actors, artisans can also be actors, and we're not confined by any stereotype of any of these roles. Sages, some famous sages, of course, would be... Abraham Lincoln was a sage, and a lot of people have I think even in the original books it was channeled as his being a scholar. And this is a really good point, because a lot of times what we see in celebrities and what we see as a persona that's perpetuated by history or the media is not the soul of who that person is. It's not the essence of who that person is. We can interpret these personas into roles, but it's not accurate to the heart of who they were. And for instance, Abraham Lincoln, at the heart of who he was a sage. He loved theater. He loved being a prankster. He loved writing. He loved speaking. He loved communicating. He loved all of these things that are inherent. He was, he loved being children and animals and exploring the paranormal and all of these things that have been completely stripped out from history. And And then we turn him into a scholar, you know, a very neutral, or a priest, something neutral or noble. And when in truth, at the heart of who he was a sage. And if you're a long-term Michael student, you don't agree with that, that's okay. But I'm just putting it out there that what we see in history as a persona, or in celebrities as a persona, is not necessarily true to who they are. For instance, the Sean Penn reference to being an artisan. You know, he performs, he acts, but if you were to know him in person, you would know he was a very one-on-one person, a very much more private person, an extremely sensitive person, able to, well, you can see that he brings it to his roles, that he's able to morph himself into the roles, you know, create the actual personality of the character he's playing, such as in the recent Harvey Milk movie. So getting to know a person is the best way to discover their role. At the heart of who they are is not always how they appear to be. And there are other factors that lend different people to show up differently in the world in a public way. And sometimes that's in discrepancy with who they are at their heart. So keep that in mind as you're exploring the Michael teachings. So some other famous sages would be Mark Twain, I think Cleopatra was considered a sage. There are a lot of sages in the world because they're very prominent. They don't mind being in the spotlight. They can end up in the spotlight a lot. Robin Williams is a sage. So some famous warriors might be Eisenhower, Churchill, Gurdjieff. If you're a long-term Michael student, you know who Gurdjieff is, and you can look that up. Or if you're not, you can look it up. Golda Meir, Geraldine Ferraro, Hillary Clinton. Again, the ordinal roles, it's really kind of hard to see them, you know, in the media and in the spotlight so heavily because, you know, they're not so interested in that. If it happens that they are in the spotlight, then that's a different story. Let's see, some famous kings. Of course, Madonna is a king essence. Who else would be a famous king essence that you could reference? Aristotle Onassis, Mark Anthony, not the singer, Katharine Hepburn. Those are some king essences that you can look at. And then, of course, scholars. Let's see, who might be some good scholar references to look into? Well, Carlos Castaneda, Caesar Augustus, Plato, Ospensky of Gurdjieff and Ospensky, Margaret Thatcher. I don't like really using these celebrity or historical references because they can be misleading, but... And also because there are some discrepancies among the channels as to what, who is what. But it just gives you a little bit of a starting ground. So what I wanted to do next is to share with you a way to help understand, or to help you now decide whether your role is yours or not. And this isn't going to be 100% definitive. But I did get some information from Michael a long time ago called The Great Lesson. And Michael called it The Great Lesson because they were pointing out that regardless of how old your soul is or how mature you are in your life or what circumstances are in your life, every lifetime will have a repetitive challenge, an inherent challenge for your essence, for your soul, in every single lifetime. And this is just part of the regaining consciousness process, because apparently when you incarnate and you are in a new body, you kind of have to regain consciousness. And in that regaining of consciousness, you're subjected to all kinds of input from parents and caretakers and culture and society and schooling and authority figures. And so in that regaining of your consciousness, you're also regaining your sense of self, or your sense of who you are, your soul. And so every lifetime will have this little challenge that's specific to each one. And Michael describes this as the process of having a conscious connection to your essence versus not having a conscious connection to your essence. So, you know, there are a lot of people who can go through their entire lives without ever considering the possibility of having a soul, or absolutely denying that they have a soul, or even completely believing that they have a soul and knowing that they have a soul, but never really letting it in as a part of their life, because that, you know, they may have developed control issues that continue to make them feel alone, and that as a personality that they need to make all of their decisions from that level. So having a conscious connection to essence is an alignment. It's a way of being aligned with your essence. And when you reject essence, and it doesn't mean necessarily rejecting that you have a soul, because like I said, even if you are totally on board with the whole concept of having a soul, it doesn't mean you've allowed that to flow into your life. And just because you've rejected the whole concept of having a soul doesn't mean that it's not present in your life. So I'm going to go through these because it can help people to figure out what their role is. Each of these lessons, or these great lessons, and I want to clarify that Michael does not describe things as being imposed on you. So even though it's called lessons, that's just a matter of terminology or you know, limitations on language. But it's not really a lesson. It's just an inherent challenge. But it's not something imposed. You know, there's nobody out there going, okay, now learn this. In fact, the whole concept of lessons, if you can remove that from your vocabulary, it can be really freeing, because your life is not about learning lessons that are imposed on you, but it is about making sense of what you've experienced. And if in that case, it can be called lessons that you've chosen to learn, but they're not imposed on you. So I just wanted to clarify that and throw that in there. But each of the roles have these inherent challenges every lifetime. And if you're familiar with the Michael teachings, you'll notice that, and especially if you're looking at the profile, the Overleaves chart that I gave you the link to, you'll notice that in the chief negative feature or the chief feature row, each of the chief features is aligned with one of the roles. So, for instance, the server is on the same axis as the self-deprecation, and the priest is aligned with arrogance, and so on and so forth. We're going to go over chief negative features in a whole other show, so I don't want to jump too far ahead, but if you're familiar with the Michael teachings, then you can see how this all fits together. So we'll begin with the server. So I'm going to be reading some of this because this is already laid out, and there's no need for me to paraphrase it. So when a server is conscious and connected to essence, regardless of its struggles and fears in life, its great lesson is in discovering that it can take care of other things, nurture other things, help other people, become tremendously effective in catering to the nuances of the needs in others, but all the while being able to take care of self. The server connected to essence and conscious of that connection chooses to take care of itself no matter what is happening in the life, knowing inherently that this is the only way to truly be successful in any endeavor of healing, care, and kindness to another person. The server who is not connected to essence chooses not only to slack in its care of itself, but loses its enthusiasm to offer care to others. This server will emphasize and prove in its universe that things and people do not truly love, that there's only discord, and that their lives are not making a difference. The server will shut down or begin to use anger as its medium of expression into life, often resorting to depression as its ultimate anger. They are self-deprecation manifested. This server is rooted in emphasizing its own and all others' inadequacies or lack of being. This can be overt or subtle, but it will show. The key to bringing a server back to a conscious connection to essence is in doing anything physically stimulating, running, jogging, going dancing, anything with dirt and the ground, getting a massage, anything that allows contact physically with what is considered the outside world and that provides data without judgment. The server, more than any other role, can often use the past as their only world and choose to gauge everything within that context. Therefore, it is successful to release the past and choose experiences that bring the server more presence by connecting them back to the life around them. So next we'll do the artisan. The artisan who is conscious of and connected to essence is one that has learned to allow happiness into the life. This may seem deceptively simple and universally applicable, but any true artisan can tell you that it is one of their great lessons to learn to like receiving and indulging in the pleasures of the world. An artisan who is connected and conscious with essence has true joy and enthusiasm for life, allowing room for whatever levels of prosperity and abundance are appropriate at that moment. They have admitted to themselves what they want, what they need, and they're allowing themselves to have it or create it. The artisan that is disconnected or rejecting of essence feels their needs are too great, that they will never get what they deserve, or that they are not worth the life being used on them. The artisan disconnected from essence is self-destruction manifest. They have determined that they are not worth what they want. Artisans are clever and creative in their disconnection from essence because they have helped to construct a culture that supports and rewards this behavior, even if unintentionally. This artisan can extract from other fragments a false compassion and pity, but never anything of real value to make the life seem worth it to them. The artisan can endure for years in this state, far longer than any other role disconnected from essence, because this state eventually requires others to reach out and care for them, even as they are not making changes themselves. A tremendous amount of energy can be used throughout the life as they search for who caused their condition or finding the latest to be blamed for stealing their self-worth. Eventually, the great lesson can be learned and the life is transformed. At some point, and probably more dramatically than any other role, a shift in the life occurs. This brings the artisan into a space that says yes to life, to what it wants, recognizes its needs, and says that they are worth the pursuit of whatever they choose. They finally grasp that they're allowed to enjoy their lives. Ways for the artisan to connect to essence in times of recognized disconnection are through any form of artistic expression, of course, though especially through painting or sculpting, and making a concerted effort to get out of the house. That's really key to the artisan's being disconnected from essence. The more that the artisan is contained in its own world, the more painful it can be. To purchase things that feel fun and are usually labeled trivial, interacting with small animals, or dancing privately to music. Next, we'll go on to the warrior. The warrior, when connected and conscious with essence, finds itself in many challenges against or within the life where there appear to be imbalances. A warrior that is conscious recognizes that their very nature requires them to live intentionally and with purpose of action. This means regardless of its tediousness or the turbulence, they are always out to conquer something. The warrior connected to essence finds itself in many manifestations of chaos and disorder as a means to exercise and emphasize what is and isn't power or empowering to them. More than any other role, they are more perpetually in crisis of challenge because this is truly where their heart lies. It may not be acceptable or as easy as other roles' experiences or what the culture supports, but it's their world and it's vital. An interesting gauge for how connected a warrior is to essence is through observing the warrior's relationships. A connected warrior develops strong, supportive social circles, while the disconnected warrior leaves a trail of broken and failed relationships. The warrior disconnected from or rejecting of essence feels that their life is one unrolling world of chaos, and they determine they are just lucky for what they have, relinquishing all effort to make a path. More than any other role, even if arguably, the warrior that is disconnected from essence spends its life seeking approval and recognition while consistently remaining in the shadows. The disconnected warrior lays low, evades conflict, and depends on others heavily. The disconnected warrior has a deep sense that at some point it needs to do or be something specific in order to be loved or recognized. Most of the time, this warrior has no idea what that something specific is and will continue to close its circle of life down until it learns to make choices for itself, grasping that they are in control of their lives. This is their great lesson, that their life is their own. The disconnected warrior is martyrdom manifest. This is another role that can regain connection to essence by incorporating or balancing with heavy physical activity, making contact with life in a physical manner that brings data into the body, emphasizing security and control, such as Tai Chi or the Alexander technique, or any sport requiring coordination, can all bring the essence back into the picture for the warrior. Asking to be held, allowing themselves to be held, or embracing someone important can help as well. So now the scholar. The scholar that's disconnected, or that is connected to essence and is conscious, has learned its great lesson, which revolves around the reality of shared love. This scholar has realized with a great amount of profundity that they will not love another until they have sought to love themselves. As we have said, there are many of these great lessons that you'll find applicable for each role. But for each of these roles, you will see these lessons are definitively deeper for each particular role when they are specifically considered. For instance, while all roles must learn to love, it remains a fact that all other roles have an easier time loving and being loved than the scholar does. The scholar who is connected to essence has realized they are whole and complete, that they like themselves, and have decided to trust and open their hearts to their life. They recognize that all aspects of life are capable of being loved, even themselves, including all of the hard times through which they have passed. When the scholar is disconnected or rejecting of essence, they do their best to ignore their lives, to resist the examination that not everything is fine. This scholar refuses to examine their vulnerabilities and have not dealt with their shadow feelings, resulting in acts of dominance or even power struggles. They have never experienced intimacy of any depth due to these things. They become adept at arguing their points, ignoring the pains of their past, destroying or deteriorating any relationship or person who touches too closely to those personal areas of pain and sensation. They are stubbornness manifest. They, more than any other role, truly fear what is called love. The disconnected scholar will usually bring in a legitimate resource of love into their lives, but this is usually held at a distance and sought only out of need for refuge, sanctuary, and a place to safely rebuild or hold up the walls around their hearts. It can be one of the most painful and emotionally tormenting of all exchanges for someone trying to love a scholar. Some suggestions for the scholar to bring in more of essence might be to talk to children about their perspective of life, actually playing with children or playing on a child's playground. Seeking laughter of any kind brings essence immediately back in for the scholar. Seeking experience of the aroma and visuals of botanical gardens or observing the ocean can help, or having flowers within visual or olfactory range. And so now the sage. The sage in connection to essence is the most obvious and closest to what the positive pole describes for the sage. They are talking. The sage connected to essence, regardless of what they are communicating, is at least communicating. They seek to express any and all feelings and thoughts as a means for communication. When they are angry, you know it. When they are sad, you know it. When they are happy, you know it. They will gladly tell you and everyone else. The sage who is disconnected from essence falls into silence. Of all the roles, the sage is the most tender and fragile of all. We do not imply this negatively. This is simply because they are the children of our universe, and no physical age or soul age will ever change this. It is their quote-unquote job. This role relates to communication, children, and the intellectual center or fifth chakra, the throat chakra. A child who has been driven or shunned into silence hangs his or her head to cover that vulnerable communication center of the throat. This same fragility and defense can be seen in all ages of a sage as well. When a sage has gone silent, they have rejected essence, literally losing consciousness. Forms of silence from a sage can range through all forms of suppression. This means this role, more than most, is susceptible to addictions and substance abuses, anything to redirect energy away from having to address what wants to be said. They are greed manifest, as they fixate on something they feel they do not have enough of and remain struggling to attain this at the expense of life and self. Their great lesson is in realizing their expression and feelings are always important to someone, but that the legitimacy of their feelings is not dependent on being well received. Ways for the sage to regain consciousness and connection are through writing letters, reading personal journal entries to someone who will listen, sharing a personal story or poetry, trusting what you feel about a person when you first meet them, and singing out loud. And now the priest. The priest who has a connection to essence realizes that life is full of many truths, and each experience has its own truth. More than any other role, this role, when connected to essence, has a deep, profound trust in life, knowing with true perception how to pass through the next moments and lead others through any confusion in life. Life is intuitively navigated. When disconnected, this essence lives in a world of concepts and ideas, rational thinking and overanalysis. This would seem harmless, but the priest disconnected from essence enforces these rationales, ideas, and overanalysis to the point of destroying life or misleading others as a means for false validation for their own personal beliefs. They lose their ability to adapt to the nuances of life and seek only to remain in a predefined, structured, and thought-out picture of life. This removes their ability to intuit and trust in life, but creates severe judgment and enforcement of fear. A great deal of effort and reaction will be used against any and all suggestions that conflict with the profound truths that they have concluded. This role, more than any other role, can make a lie become a profound but false truth about themselves, life, and others. They are arrogance manifested. To help bring the priest back into connection, we suggest to this role, more than any other role, to literally make time to communicate to what you consider to be your higher self every day. We also suggest purchasing or making a set of cards with inspirational affirmations or a book of quotes that can be a message or a thought for the day for whenever in need. This will help lend insight from some place beyond analysis and rationale. And finally, the king. The king who has a connection to essence is keenly aware of all of the possibilities within a life and live with a sense of connection to all of its life. The king connected to essence does not just live the life, it is the life. The king recognizes that it is the source of all of its life through choice, creation, and even from a higher place. This king sees no separation based on time or space, but only the beautiful unfolding of a life as perfect, no matter what. They do not judge the life, themselves, or others for their position in it, but instead recognizes itself in everything around it. This king has dealt with what might be called its dark side, and now sees through that same darkness in others, recognizing all of the illusions. Limitation is never seen as an obstacle, but as an important aspect of life to help direct growth. A king who has rejected essence becomes highly separated from its life, separated within itself and from others. Its great lesson is in acknowledging that they are a part of everything and everyone, not a part. That's a play on words from Michael, that they are a part of everything, not apart from everything. This disconnected essence is caught in circles of self-gratification and simple distraction for stimulation. They feel they alone are completely responsible for all achievements in life and resist any help in any form, in fact, sometimes violently. This king rejects people outright due to imperfections reflected about them and creates enormous amounts of space and time between those who are their most powerful support. They are impatience manifested. This king who is rejecting of essence will forever remain in a circle of development since they allow no other influences or support into their lives. Ways for a king to bring back a sense of connection to essence is through visiting spiritual temples for moments of quiet and reflection, watching or reading information shared by spiritual leaders with whom they resonate. They can make changes in the life that reflect a commitment to the acknowledgement of the life force in all others, such as through vegetarianism or volunteer work. More than any other role, we would have to doubly emphasize that this role could benefit from asking for help. So there are what Michael considers to be the great lesson for each role, and you might recognize that if you already know your role, and if it's your role, it probably rang profoundly true. I don't know if I delivered it well in reading that, but you know, I'm a sage, and when I read the sage thing, it almost moves me to tears to think about, you know, the spectrum of experiences that I've had that have put me in positions where when I've gone silent, it means something's wrong. Something is terribly wrong. And of course, I know artisans, and I know that they have often, you know, struggled against having, and sometimes will end up in being in positions of taking in order to get what they want, and justifying it, and or denying themselves those pleasures altogether. I just hope that you found some resonance to some of the things that were listed for each of them. And just because you're alive and you're aware of your soul doesn't mean you're always going to be consciously connected to essence. So knowing that what it looks like to fall away from our conscious connection to essence can really help you to catch yourself and bring you back into that using some of the techniques Michael suggested. Okay, so before bombarding you with a lot of information about the roles, and there is a lot more to go into, I am going to open up the phone lines for people to call in and ask questions, and hopefully you'll have some questions that will be of benefit to other students. Otherwise, we may end up wrapping up the show, and if that's the case, then if you want to learn more about the Michael teachings, make sure you go to truthloveenergy.com. If you want your profile, make sure you ask for one and get it through your favorite channel. And don't be shy about asking for your profile from different channels. And no matter what some channels tend to say that if you ask for the profile more than once, then you're going to get, you've compromised the connection to get accurate information. I find that to be a little bit, bullshit, because I don't see why you shouldn't have the right to ask for your profile from various sources and then compare them together, knowing that there are potentially going to be discrepancies among the channels for a lot of various reasons. Bad days, bad channels, superficial interpretations. So ultimately, whether you get your profile from other people or whether you get it from one person or whether you figure it out on your own, ultimately you have to explore the meanings of it and decide for yourself, okay? So let's open up the lines and see who we have here.
Calling in. No one ever calls in to these shows, so I apologize. But I'm going to look in the chat room and see if there are any comments or questions that I can add to this show, the live version at least. And if you're listening to this and you've had trouble catching parts of it, what I'm going to do is I'll be downloading the file and editing it and releasing it under the Truth Love Energy subscription. So you can find that through iTunes. If you just go to iTunes, don't grab the Blog Talk Radio version of it. Grab the TLE Radio version of it. So make sure you look at what those are. So if you're in iTunes, go to the podcast section and just do a search for Truth, Love, Energy as one word, and you should pull up a few things. So just make sure you don't pick the the BTR version of it. So let me see if there are any comments in the chat room. One of the questions is, does the great lesson affect casting as well? And casting we're going to discuss in the next show, because casting is more of an advanced concept, and I want to stick to the basic concept. But since the question was asked, and there's a lot of students probably listening now live and in the post-recording that are familiar with the teachings, I'll go ahead and answer that. But no, the casting is not relevant to the great lesson that Michael's described as the great lesson. It will have some bearing because you can relate to it. Your casting might make you feel more like you might resonate to the great lessons of that, the role that represents your casting. But it's really focused on the heart of who you are in the essence role. So the great lesson specific to the to the role in essence. Oh, I see. We do have a caller. It looks like we have Tony.
Hello.
Well, hello there.
Hello, honey. I finally got you back. I kept losing you guys.
Kept losing us?
Yeah, I lost you a couple times.
Oh,
and
I know.
Suddenly, and then my phone died and had to plug it in. But, when you're talking about the casting, doesn't that kind of function like the ascendant? In an astrological chart, in a way, it kind of sets a timbre to the role.
We'll go more into detail in the next show on that, but I like to compare it to the ascendant. It's sort of the one that you default to during your day-to-day living. Your casting describes the way you function in your day-to-day living, but your essence role is who you are. At the heart of who you are, it's when you're when you really shine. That's when the role shows up. It's kind of like another way of looking at it is that your role is who you are, and your casting is a lot of times how you are. So, for instance, I'm a sage. So,
like me.
Oh, yay! So I shine when I'm teaching. I shine when I'm, being entertaining and having fun and getting people. That really is who I am. But on a day-to-day basis, I function very much like a server because that's my casting. So I'm constantly gauging the needs of people around me. I love taking care of things. I have lots of plants. I have lots of animals. And so you see the server part of me show up just as strongly, but it's more on a day-to-day basis. And then there's these moments that I shine, and that's when your essence kind of comes through. So I do like the comparison of the ascendant versus, the sun sign.
Well, it's interesting you were talking about Lincoln being a sage. One of the prior lives I've been investigating was actually a brigadier general in the Union Army, Thomas Mayer, that I've been getting quite a bit of validation of our connection as each other. And he was definitely a sage who was slipped as an oratorial at his worst and his inspiration at his best. What do you think in terms of the combination between actors and politicians in terms of communicating ideas? At essence. I mean, that's a roundabout way to my question. I'm not really quite sure because I didn't think I was going to get you guys.
So you're asking, do I find that there's a connection between politicians and actors in how they...
As sages, you know, in terms of, you know, from the sage perspective, you know, that seems to be the a spectrum of personas that...
You mean like sages will gravitate to those positions because that's where they can disseminate their truth?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay. Oh, yeah, definitely. Sages love politics and they love acting because then they can, you know, that's a great platform for providing their truth. But I do find that sages kind of lose interest in politics over the years and kind of, you know, the older the soul, which I think Lincoln was an older soul, was definitely, you know, moved into these positions because... It was necessary, and also politics was very different back then than they are now. So, like the younger sages might be interested, and I mean younger. If you guys are listening and you are new to the teachings, I'm talking about soul age in terms of youngness. But the younger soul ages might be interested in politics because then it's a great platform for all kinds of scandal and exciting entertainment and.
Well, you know, you channeled me as an old five, which makes a lot of sense because in I always followed politics, but I have found now that the bigger picture story is a lot more interesting than the little picture story.
Yeah, definitely.
And I wondered
go ahead. Sages might find a lot more freedom in a position like acting because then they can create different personas and different platforms that cater to different truths, and it might be a lot more fun to teach that way.
Well, that's actually where I ended up not making any money yet, but, you know, I'm back in the theater again.
Yeah, sages like that.
But not acting.
Or where they end up in positions where they're teaching and or just being, you know, fun people in people's lives. So it's not, you know, those are mediums that they might be attracted to, but you know, in studying this stuff, that you can sages can show up anywhere, priests can show up anywhere, kings can show up anywhere. So there's not one particular thing, even though they do gravitate towards certain mediums.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And good luck in all of your saginess and your and your exploring the stage versus politics. But I still find it to be very interesting politics. But it's almost like I'm fascinated by it by not necessarily needing to be in it, but watching it as if it's reminiscent.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a nostalgia about it, and also it seems like it's frustrating too to see how some politicians or how the political arena has dropped into it being more of a ineffective form of entertainment. Not necessarily effective for change.
Well, I think it's interesting if you look at it in terms of the negative pole, you know, what you get with the whole, you know, spinning of information to me is a perfect example of sage in a negative pole.
Yes, all the spinning,
you know,
definitely.
That ability to manipulate via language and idea.
Yes, and you know what's interesting? The older that you get, the older your soul gets as a sage, the less comfortable that feels, the more transparent you start to become. It's not comfortable anymore to lie. It's not comfortable to twist the truth. It's not comfortable to,
pander.
Exactly. It becomes almost embarrassing to see others do that, and you become extremely attuned to what's true about a person, even if they're not attuned to it. So sages really get focused on what's true. And that can be, as you get older, something that it becomes really important, like honesty in relationships, honesty in communication. And I know that in my experience, that's what it is. One of the biggest things that sets me off is feeling like somebody's lying to me or lying to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do it. Or if I feel like somebody... You know, when I'm around people, I feel like they can see everything about me. So I feel
obvious. Do you think it's the ability to of the sage role to read the undercurrents of energy from a communication perspective?
Sages, you think that they might have a, you're asking if they have sort of a skill in reading behind the lines, between the lines,
yeah,
type thing?
Exactly.
Oh, definitely. Oh,
yeah.
Definitely. I'm going to see if I can get Martha on the air here.
Oh, cool. Martha's another sage, too.
I think, I know. Sages love to get on the air. Martha, would you like to get on the air? I'm going to see if I can get her on here. If so, press 1. Oh, there she is. Let's get her on here. Martha?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hi. So I was not going to push the button because I didn't want to make it a total sage party.
Oh,
why not?
Well, I don't think we've ever had, I think we've had one other role ever make it onto the air, onto the show.
No, I just, when you started talking about the sages and the whole lying thing, oh my God, that's something I'm like been thinking about deeply for, I don't know, 6 months or something now, that like I don't want to do anything that makes me feel like I'm lying in any way, and it's so hard to try and function in society. I work at it for a big corporation, you know, and to try and be yourself there is really hard.
Yeah, being yourself and feeling so exposed because you want to be honest about who you are, and then trying to conform to an environment that asks you not to be yourself can be really difficult for a sage, an older sage especially.
Yeah, and
problem.
I work for Dell, you know, very young soul company. And, you know, I have tried to sort of bring more of myself into it, but I just have to sit there and edit so much I feel like I'm acting there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've worked in those corporate environments too, and I don't last very long, but...
And that's sort of the dilemma.
Well,
I mean, you know.
Try being a Sag rising sage.
well, I'm a Leo rising one, so that's a little.
I'm a Leo
with Sag rising.
Wait, but what?
No, I said I'm a Leo with Sagittarius rising.
Well, I'm a Taurus with Sag rising, a Leo moon.
So no wonder we're all talking.
And you're a Capricorn with Leo rising, right, Troy?
No, Aquarius with Leo rising.
You're Aquarius, so you're first degree Aquarius?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All right, okay.
But what do you guys find, well, Martha, you're talking about this, in that kind of environment, that kind of restrictive environment, you start to, you have to find your little niches where you can confide in people that you work with and be yourself just as an outlet, or do you even have that?
Well, I mean, there is one person there that I do a little bit, but she's not a very old soul, I don't think. And so mostly even if I'm not hungry, I leave at lunch and go drive around the car and sing to the radio and whatever.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, there always has to be this sense of balance. Like you have to do something. Because a sage, you know, they start to wither. And an artist, well, any person will start to wither if they can't feel like they're being themselves. But sages who are so expressive, if they have to contain that, it can be... It can really feel painful or debilitating.
That's what I've been living for the last, I don't know,
it
8 years.
It feels arid to me. I feel like I'm literally...
Dying?
Shriveling. Shriveling.
Yeah, definitely. So one way that I have found in the past to deal with that as a sage is to absolutely assign the work environment where it's not appropriate, where it's not invited, where you're not welcome, there's no audience, and let that be just that. And find outlets outside of that environment and let yourself go in that way. Because as long as you try to constantly, you know, fight that in the work environment, it's not going to work. It never works. And I always end up in trouble or...
I'm serially kicked out of places.
Yeah. So you kind of gain a maturity after a while where you say, okay, you know, I'm in this environment because it's serving me. It's taking care of myself. I may not like it and I might not like the dynamic, but that's not what it's about. It's not my platform. And then you find your platform outside of that to find balance. So that's hard to do, but it's what you have to do if you want to find that balance, strike that balance. just like going, like you said, you leave and go driving in your car and sing to yourself. That helps.
Yeah, I feel like a freak, but hey, you know.
Oh, yeah, don't worry. Yeah, don't judge yourself if you're finding some outlet. Don't worry about that.
Well,
you're not a freak.
It's less weird than if you're driving around your car and you're talking to yourself. People kind of can tell you're singing, so that's not quite as weird as if you drive around and talk to yourself. Now, you could make up your own lyrics to the song, which would be having a conversation with yourself, and nobody would know.
Other people in the chat room who... Oh, here we got another... We have another caller. I don't know who you are, 77... Oh, they want to come on the air. I'm going to leave you two on here with me, so let's see who
okay.
this is. 775?
Yep.
Hello,
who is this?
Hi,
this is John.
Hey, John!
How's it
You're
going?
The warrior
I thought,
in the chat room, right?
I'm a warrior. I thought I'd break up the...
Oh, yeah.
The
trash party.
Yeah, you got to crash the chickens.
Well, you know,
we'll keep squawking.
It was. I can't stay on long, but it was interesting to hear about like how you cope with work, because I know I deal with that, too. I work for a large company, and I find for what I have to do is kind of like have a mission, because I'm a warrior, so it's like I have something I want to accomplish, and so if I have this mission, then I can... plow through all of that, you know, the hard part.
Oh, yeah, that would work. You have some sort of, you're bringing an intention into the environment. You got to focus.
Right, so then it's
yeah.
a challenge can be met. But I was kind of thinking, what would each of the roles, like kind of coping tactics be for that?
Yeah, well, I think what comes to mind for sages is something like a teaching. Because, you know, if you can find at least one person who's interested in what you have to say as a sage, that really makes a big difference. But if you can't, then it can be really lonely. But if you can find at least one person to talk to, it makes a huge difference, at least in my old work environments. Do you guys find that to be the same, sages?
Yeah. Well, I always end up in the teaching position, whether it's with a customer, because I've always been in service positions like, you know, sales, which is, you know, very sagey. But it always becomes sort of instructional, inspirational is how things usually end up spinning for me.
Yeah, or to make them laugh. If you can make people laugh, that makes a big difference too, as sages.
Of course, that's a...
But John, that's a really good point. I might ask to put together a whole thing about, you know, working in restricted environments, like what could help bring balance and peace and just, you know, to let you function in those environments that feel so uncomfortable for a lot of us. That's a great idea.
Yes, definitely.
And I know you said you can't stay long, so I don't want to keep you on here, but did you want to say anything more?
That's it for now.
That's all?
The warrior man, a few words.
Yeah, come in with my purpose and then get out.
Okay. Well, you did a good job. That's a great idea.
A foray.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Bye-bye. Oh, that's a good idea. I like that idea. I'm going to ask Michael about that.
Yeah, because you could actually figure out strategies, you know, via roles
yeah.
for coping.
Yeah, and it's the warrior who focuses on strategy who brought this up.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the biggest lesson, I think, has been to just keep my mouth shut.
Oh, my God.
Is. And, yeah, it sucks, but what are you going to do?
Oh, I know. Yeah, because it's not, you know, it's not effective. It's not always
right.
effective, and it falls on deaf ears or reactionary ears. If you just keep,
or you, people
you know,
just start marginalizing you because you're annoying.
Exactly.
See, I've never been able to function in large corporations.
Well,
yeah.
I
have a strong
now
personality,
years.
And I'm much better in, you know, smaller groups, I found out.
Well, you mean in that environment?
Yeah, I can't large corporations and I are like oil and water. I really, really work their last nerve, and I don't have a problem doing that, so it doesn't make me very popular.
Yeah, and I think some people might think that is a contradiction to the sage, but I don't think that that's the case, because you know that you're lost in the you're completely lost in those big corporations. You're just a cog, and sages do not like to be in that kind of position. They don't like to feel insignificant or they don't like to be invisible. And so when you narrow it down to a smaller group or a smaller company, even, it can help you to feel significant and feel like you're seen, and that makes
and
a big difference.
And that you have definitely something to contribute.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you guys, I think we're going to wrap up the show, and I really appreciate you guys calling in. I love bringing, you know, other people in here besides my voice, because I don't like oration. I don't like talking to myself talk. So it's nice of you guys to take time to call in. I appreciate that. So in 2 weeks, there will be the advanced teaching. So we're going to talk about casting and cadres and entities then. So that might be of interest to you guys.
All right, honey. Have a wonderful afternoon. I'm going back to sewing. Oh, boy.
Okay,
a happy
you guys.
Day. All right,
bye-bye. Bye.
So, sorry to everybody who has tuned in and are not a sage. I can't help that. If you're not a sage, it's great if you would call in, but, you know, we take whoever calls in. And thank you, John Warrior, for calling in and bringing some balance there. And we'll wrap up the show now. If you want to learn more about the Michael teachings, and if you want to explore these seven roles, these seven essence roles, in more depth and also in a lot more sort of structured way besides this talk show, just check out truthloveenergy.com. And if you need a profile, make sure you ask for one using the contact form at truthloveenergy.com. Or look around the internet. You can find other channels who can get your profile for you. And like I said before, don't limit your access to a profile through just getting it through a channel. This teaching is available to everybody, and you can figure things out on your own. The channels are really great for helping you in validating stuff or getting information to confirm what you think might have been true for yourself. But ultimately, you can figure out your role on your own if you explore it long enough. So don't think that you have to pay a lot of money to any channel to get your profile. And we'll be back next week. On the first Sundays of every month at 1 p.m. is the basic teachings that we'll explore. And I think next month we will be exploring the goals. So we'll go over all the goals and discuss those. And the third Sunday of every month at 1 p.m. we'll discuss advanced concepts. And that will be the first show for that. We'll discuss the cadres, entities, and casting. So I hope you tune in if you're an advanced student. And if you're not an advanced student, you still might be able to get something out of it, hopefully. So thank you, everybody. Have a great day, everybody.